Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, where we share all kinds of tips, advice, and interview guests on all things innovation and leadership in modern marketing. Each episode is a conversation with inspiring people who make wonderful contributions to our knowledge in these areas and spark curiosity and ideas to pursue. Join me, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and let's get into today's masterclass on this InnovaBuzz podcast.
A lot of people ask me the question, you know, am I going to make it as a coach, or am I going to make it in this thing that I really want to do and really want to pursue? And I always respond, do you have the ability to learn, to grow, to take feedback? If the answer is yes, of course, give yourself enough time and everything's figureoutable. As long as you're willing to learn, take feedback, do the work, then the only thing that's going to stop you is if you give yourself an artificially short deadline, you know, and call anything beyond that point a failure. Just love what you do, commit to it, and as you go, you'll iterate and get to where you want to go.
Hi there, innovator. It's really great to be back with another episode. I hope you've had an awesome week so far. I trust too that you enjoyed my conversations with Ted Rubin, social media expert, and with Amanda Turner, writer and digital nomad. I'm really excited today to have on the InnovaBuzz podcast as my guest, James Hayes of Developmental Edge. James helps leaders and teams set crazy big goals and make the changes required to achieve them. He's passionate about human development and what's possible for us when we can access the full range of our creativity and our intelligence. James is also an internal coach for the team at Canva. A quick promotional message from our sponsor, that's InnovaBiz, where we help coaches and consultants build professional credibility, engage their target audience, and connect with their ideal client. That requires absolute clarity about who your ideal clients are and how you can help them. To help you get that clarity about your ideal client, take a look at our Marketing Master Mini Class, where in less than 30 minutes, you'll gain absolute clarity on your ideal client and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. Access the Marketing Master Mini Class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. In our discussion today, James talked to me about how he discovered his passion for coaching. He explained the importance of asking powerful questions. And we talked a lot about giving feedback, about receiving feedback, and asking for feedback. Without further ado, then, let's fly into the hive and get the buzz from James Hayes. Hi, I'm your host, Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz, and I'm really excited to welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast today from Sydney, Australia, James Hayes, who's a leadership development coach and facilitator. Welcome to the InnovaBuzz podcast, James. It's a real privilege to have you as my guest.
Thank you for having me, Jürgen. It's a pleasure for me to be here.
Now, Vivian Goh, who was our guest on episode 241 of the InnovaBuzz podcast, suggested that we get you on and have a conversation. So a big hello to Vivian.
Yes, thank you, Vivian. Thanks for connecting us.
Now, James, through your company, Developmental Edge, you offer developmental coaching, mentoring, and training, and it's focused on kind of leadership, but from a mindset perspective, and also for coaches in particular to become highly sought after in ways that get results and get them referrals.
Correct.
Now, before we start talking all things coaching and helping coaches grow their business, tell us a little bit about your background, because I know you started out in finance and economics. So how did you get from there to where you are today?
You know, the journey starts even a little bit earlier than that. I pinpoint the origins of where I am right now. Back when I was 13, I used to compete in martial arts. I used to do Taekwondo. I used to fight all around the country. And one of the things I was desperate for back in those days was some help with mindset, because I realized that the difference between the people who, you know, would win consistently versus those who would not would be those people who had the mental edge. And if you think about these competitions, these tournaments, they can be so emotionally intense, because you're going to compete in front of everyone, you're going to fight someone you never fought before. It can be quite stressful. I used to get very stressed. And I was desperate for resources in the mindset area, and I could never find any. I could find people to help me with my technical skills, you know, my training and those kinds of things, but I was never able to find anything or anyone to help me with that. And so fast forward a few years, I studied finance, I studied economics, I ended up in the finance field, and I got sent to a leadership and coaching company just to get some developments, just some coaching for myself as an emerging leader in the organization. And for the first time ever, I got to experience the thing I had been looking for 10 years previously, which was, you know, this whole realm of mindset. I did not know it existed previous to that point. And I just fell in love. I got so much out of the experience that I kept going back and I kept going back, and I found additional reasons to get more coaching. And eventually I ended up going all the way through this particular methodology's coach training track, got noticed by the founder of the methodology, a gentleman from the United States called Dr. Michael Hall. And the company said to me about 2 years in, they said to me, "Well, why aren't you doing this as your profession? Why aren't you doing this as your career? You're here all the time. We can't get rid of you. You're like a bad smell. You show up more than the people who, you know, are wanting to be coaches in this field. And why aren't you doing this?" And I didn't have a good answer. For the first time, I was like, that's actually an amazing question. Why am I not doing this? I'm in love with it. I'm spending all my time outside of my, you know, 9 to 5, exploring this and researching and getting involved in it. Anyway, long story short, I ended up leaving the company, joining the coach training company that I first was a student at, started this apprenticeship with this company. And, you know, several years later, I ended up getting mentored by the founder of the methodology. And yeah, it just took off from there. All the doors opened from there. And about 7-8 years later, here I am now.
Yeah, that's fascinating. And so going back to when you were a young man and in that Taekwondo situation, and you knew there was something missing, but you weren't sure what it was.
Right.
When you suddenly discovered that, and you know, you're describing how you fell in love with it and so on. To me, the question of, well, why don't you do this for a living? Because you're in love with it, obviously, and you're learning whatever you can. You're absorbing this like a sponge. Seems to be a mindset question. The obvious thought I had was, well, why didn't that occur to you?
Right. You know, and it's a funny question, because I've asked myself the same question before. And it just honestly never occurred to me. I even remember telling people, "Well, I'm not here because I want to be a coach. I'm just here because I want to grow and develop." And it was just never on my agenda. I think I had a very mainstream, conventional idea of what I was supposed to do next at that stage of my life. You know, I'd studied finance, I'd studied all these things. If I had known this field existed, I probably wouldn't have studied those things. I would have gone straight for this in the onset. But yeah, it just never occurred to me. I had this 5-year plan all laid out, or this 5-year finance plan all laid out for me. And I think that kind of blinded me from what I was genuinely in love with until somebody else kind of gave me that wake-up call.
Yeah, yeah. And did you, when that wake-up call came, did you see that there was the possibility there to basically totally replace your existing way to generate an income and sustain your lifestyle?
No, no, I did not. In fact, that was one of the very big initial hesitations, because the background I had come from was very established. You know, finance is one of the oldest fields we have. And one of the big questions was, well, how am I going to make it as a coach? How am I going to, you know, transition into a full-time living? How will I do those things? And I didn't have clear answers at the time. So it was a bit of a leap of faith, a bit of courage. I was also lucky that I had, you know, I had the opportunity to work with an existing established organization, probably one of the largest in Australia. So I wasn't all on my own. I had some support in learning the ropes and those kinds of things, but it still took a leap of faith.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I remember my mother telling me, "What are you doing? You studied this whole thing. What are you doing?
And you've got a secure job, and you're throwing it all in."
Yeah.
All right. So, what is it that you do today, and why?
Right. So, I've spent the last decade coaching, leadership coaching. I still do some of that now. Right now, I'm working with a very large tech company in Surry Hills, doing a lot of leadership coaching. But my passion, my focus, the thing that I champion and market and kind of obsess about right now is helping new coaches, coaches who are kind of new to the field, launch their business, attract clients, create their programs so that they can actually do what they love to do in a commercially viable way. That's what I'm all about today.
Okay. And so that's their people that are making that transition that you made
exactly
when you were asked that question.
Right. So yeah, a lot of it is helping people who are just like me in that exact same position. People who are brilliant, you know, big open hearts, smart people who just tend, at least in this industry, tend often not to be, you know, commercially minded. And that can hold a lot of people back. That can prevent people from doing, sharing their gifts and doing what they love, which I think is, an unnecessary tragedy. And I'm all about resolving that and helping people in that position do what they genuinely love.
Yeah. Yeah. All right. So, in terms of getting those new coaches started and overcoming the commercial barriers, what do you see as some of those barriers?
I think the biggest, one of the biggest barriers is this idea that a lot of people, it's not just coaches have this idea, a lot of people have this idea, but this idea that I need to get it all perfect. I need to have all the questions answered before I start. I need to build this big, beautiful, complex, amazing thing with all the bells and whistles. And just this idea that I've got to create this big thing holds people back because that's hard to do, to create this big thing from scratch. It invites people to procrastinate, and it creates this kind of, you know, borderline perfectionist mentality. You know, and even if people don't procrastinate and they take lots of action and they make it happen, it's a little bit like, you know, creating a first-class flight to Uzbekistan only to find out nobody actually wants to go there in this hypothetical metaphor. So I think that's one of the biggest traps for people. My philosophy is something that I've learned from doing a lot of coaching in the tech industry, this concept of minimal viable product or minimal viable concept, which is an agile concept, which is, for those of you who have never heard of that before, essentially it means rather than building this big, amazing, perfect product, just start with create the minimal number of things you need to create to get that sale, to provide that service or to create that product. And then you can iterate from there, but just start with that. Don't start with this big, overwhelming, complicated thing.
Yeah, that's a great philosophy. I love that. And we do a lot of work with people and in particular coaches to building their online courses. And I always, and I face that quite a lot. And I mean, one of the things I love the saying that you don't have to be great to start, but you have to start to be great.
Exactly.
I don't know who to attribute that to. It didn't come from me. I sort of read it somewhere and I just adopted it. But the other thing I always tell people with the online training programs is all you need is an outline and a teaser, and then you sell it.
Yes.
And
yes.
if nobody buys it, well, yeah. then it's not, there's no interest. It's the flight, that flight to Uzbekistan that nobody wants.
Yeah.
And so you haven't wasted a lot of time developing it. So then you come up with another concept and do the same thing a lot of people pay for the concept. And yeah. then of course, and people always come back and say, oh, then I'm going to be under pressure and I have to, have to work on it real quick. Right. And I say, well, that's a good problem to have. You know, at least you haven't done it for nothing.
I'm totally on the same page with you. And that's how I've created each of my programs, from my first program to my current one. And I've had that exact thing where it's like, well, here's my hypothesis. I think this idea is a good idea. Let me share it in the market, see what the market thinks. And often the market's got good feedback, you know, change this. I'm not particularly interested in that. From that, you can refine a good quality concept and sell it. And if people buy it, well, then you've got to make sure you've got everything you need to build it and deliver it. And that can be stressful. And I've been through that stress, but it's so worthwhile. It's a way better stress than spending all of this time building this thing that in the end nobody wants. That can be very demoralizing.
Yeah, yeah. And also coming back to your point of perfection, I have a second stage that I tell people then, which is the first time you put it out there, you invite, and you know, this is like beta testers in the software example, but I don't call it that. I use the, you know, foundation members. Mm. So, because that's kind of special, right? So, you know, do you want to be a foundation member for this program? It's, you know, it's going to be it's never going to be at this low price again.
Right.
And
right.
as a foundation member, first of all, you've got lifetime membership at this low price. Secondly, you know, I will be developing the program as we go along, but as a foundation member, you'll have, you know, direct input into building that program. So you'll be able to tell me, you know, this is good. I need more of this. This other stuff was less valuable. Mm. And then you build it. And then once you sort of iterate that, you talked about iteration before, then you go on to the second iteration, and of course the second launch is a bigger launch and a higher price point.
Right. I have the exact same philosophy. I've done the same thing. Yeah
Great. Okay, well, tell us a little bit about your work at the tech company and how that kind of factors back into your work with coaches.
So I do some private coaching, some leadership coaching, and so one company I've done a lot of coaching for is Canva, for example. They're a tech company in Surrey Hills, and I love that company. That's
Canva with the where you can get all the online images and
correct, yeah,
put together.
And that's an amazing
social
company.
Media and blogs. Yeah, that's great product.
Yeah, I love the leadership there. I love the people there. And so I still get involved in coaching in spaces like that where I get to do what I love, which is coaching as well as helping coaches. So they tend to be, for me, kind of separate affairs. One would be kind of the private stuff that I do, and then the other one would be the public services that I offer, which would be for other coaches.
Mm-hmm. And do you do any workshops, like you know, group training?
Yeah, quite frequently do workshops. Done some online workshops, face-to-face workshops. Currently, I've been doing some workshops around feedback, how to give really effective feedback, how to be calm and confident in the face of a changing environment and lots of different pressures and so on. One kind of coach-related workshop more recently has been how to really facilitate motivation with your coaches and drive accountability. Canva's amazing in that they've got a really strong coaching culture, and they want, you know, they don't want managers, they want coaches in the organization who are helping grow their people. So I get to do a lot of exciting work being a part of building that kind of platform there.
Yeah. Yeah, I was reminded back when you said Canva has a very strong coaching culture. Back in my corporate career, there was this push at some point, you know, talking about, well, we have to learn how to coach. We don't want bosses and managers, and we do want leaders, but the leaders have to be coaches. and they instigated all these programs, and I could never relate to it because it was all so academic and and so transactional, and I just didn't understand it at all until I, you know, started out in my own business and then started looking around and, well, who can I learn from and who can I talk to that will help me here, because now I don't have colleagues around that are in the same company that, you know, can I can go to and say, well, how do I do this or who do I speak to for this? So I went out and started talking to a whole lot of other people. And, of course, then I started getting exposed to business coaches, and I met an amazing business coach who I'm still working with today, and realized that, hey, coach, this is what coaching is, not what I was taught in back in the corporate days. So I'm glad to hear that that there's companies that are actually embracing that at the right sort of level.
Yeah. It's definitely going to come from the right place. I mean, there are places where they espouse, you know, the organization may espouse coaching and espouse it being for the well-being of people and their growth and development and so on. But often it can just be more management in disguise, or more getting people to adopt specific ideas or KPIs or whatever that the organization wants, which isn't necessarily what's growing and developing the individual. It's just a different flavor of management.
All right. Well, you mentioned feedback. You do feedback workshops. So I'm kind of curious as to what sort of things do you talk about in feedback, and what are some of the tips that you might have for us around doing feedback well?
Doing feedback well comes down to two things. One is your attitude towards feedback, and then the other one is your execution of feedback. I would say the biggest struggle and biggest obstacle for people tends to be on the mind. I mean, they're both very important, but the biggest struggle tends to be on the mindset side. A lot of people have this idea that if I give feedback to someone, then it's going to hurt their feelings. They're going to take it really badly. They're not going to want to be friends with me anymore. You know, basically, it's going to ruin their relationship is the idea that a lot of people have inside their minds, which is very interesting because one of the questions I'll usually ask every classroom is I'll say, put your hands up if you wish you were getting more feedback in your day-to-day from your colleagues, from your coach, from your, you know, mentors, et cetera. Who wants more feedback? Everyone puts their hand up. You know, 95% of the room puts their hand up. And then I'll say, okay, leave your hand up if you are then giving and asking for feedback on a weekly basis or a monthly basis. And then all the hands go down. and then later on, when we talk about, you know, the attitude towards feedback and, you know, this fear of hurting people's feelings, I'll ask everyone to look back around the room and notice everyone had their hand up. Everyone was asking for feedback. Mm. And there's a lot of research now. I came across a statistic recently that 65% of employees, this was from a study done from Forbes magazine, 60% of people want more feedback than they're currently getting. 42% of millennials want feedback every single week, which is more than twice the amount of any other generation previously. And all this research is saying people want feedback, but there's this, you know, blocker inside, or this attitude inside that's going to hurt people's feelings. So a lot of what we talk about in the workshop is like demystifying that and really challenging that idea, and also promoting the idea that to have a healthy, strong relationship, you actually need to have conflict, healthy conflict. You need to share differences. You need to share different opinions. You can't forge bonds without having those kinds of conversations. And I always ask people to think about their current friends and family. Think about the relationships where it's really surface level. And I'm going to put my money on those relationships being characterized by surface level conversations where we're not putting the real issues on the table. Whereas your best friends, the people that you can connect with, you know, really easily, I bet those are the same people. You just tell them straight what you're thinking, be honest, give them feedback. You know, so a lot of what we talk about is the mindset of it, but then also the execution. what I'll delineate in the execution side, and this is, I guess, this is a good tip for anyone, is if you're giving feedback, it's not really feedback if you're not being specific.
Yeah.
If you're sharing judgments.
That's one of my favorites. You know, the thing that I always think, you know, particularly the positive feedback, like, oh, that was well done. Great job.
Well, yeah, great job, yeah.
That's really useless. Yeah,
right.
That's just ego stroking, but it's not really feedback.
So I always tell people, be specific. If you're receiving feedback and someone says that's good, okay, great. What specifically did I do? What was the behavior and what was the impact of that behavior? Or if you're giving feedback, same thing. You know, highlight what is the behavior you're talking about and what is the impact that you saw. And always separating, you know, fact from interpretation.
Hmm.
When you're giving feedback, if you use specific language, factual language, you know, Bob came 15 minutes late to the meeting, it's kind of objective language. If I say Bob never comes on time and is really lazy and unpunctual, that's not factual. That's just my interpretation. And interpretations are what upset people, not factual language.
Hmm. Yeah, and I love that you add the impact there as well. So you can say, well, Bob, you know, you came 15 minutes late to the meeting today, and as a result, you kind of disrupted things. We had to go back and revisit the agenda and why we were here and everything. And then in the end, we went 15 minutes overtime because we had to kind of bring you up to speed.
A cool model, which I didn't invent, and I'm not sure who invented it, so I feel bad about that right now. But a cool model is there's an acronym called SBI, which is Situation Behavior Impact, which just helps people remember, if I'm going to give feedback, okay, what was the situation? Situation was the meeting.
Hmm.
What was the behavior? The behavior was Bob came 15 minutes late. What was the impact? All of our decisions got delayed. We didn't get time to finish all the things on our agenda, and now such and such consequence has occurred.
Yeah. Yeah, that's really great. All right. Well, and, you know, I guess the other part of feedback in my mind is it's not just negative feedback.
Like, correct. Yeah, yeah, know, yeah.
Another bit of feedback out of that meeting might be, it's got to be specific. I think it's got to be timely as well. So immediately after the meeting, the manager might go up to Mary and say, hey, Mary, I really liked how you kind of took control of that agenda item and really pulled people together and made sure everybody had their say. And as a result of that, we, you know, really quickly came to a decision there and everybody had their opinions and everybody's on board now and we can move forward. So well done. Then you can say well done because you've kind of given the specific.
Yeah. Yeah. You've shared what your evaluation is connected to. You know, which is, you know, these behaviors and these things. And I think people fall into two camps when it comes to feedback. Some people feel really comfortable giving the, you know, so-called positive feedback, but they hate giving the so-called negative feedback. And then there's other people who are the opposite, that, you know, that if they're getting, you know, compliments and so on, they don't think they're real unless they're getting the critical feedback. You know, both camps are only giving half of the picture. If people are going to improve, they need to know, what should I keep doing? What should I do more of? That tends to be the so-called positive feedback.
Yeah, yeah.
But also, what could I change? If I changed this to what, you know, that would help me improve. So a really easy way of doing it is, if ever you're giving feedback, I always recommend people just give pros and cons. What were the pros of what you saw and what were the cons? And that helps people both receive the feedback well, because they're getting more of a balanced experience, but also they get both sides of the coin. They know what to keep doing and what to change.
All right. Now, do you have any tips for asking for feedback? So, you know, you've got your workshop, you've got everybody put their hands up saying want more feedback because they're not getting it. So what can people do to ask for the feedback, to elicit the feedback if they feel they're not getting enough?
I think the very first thing to do is talk to whoever it is you would like feedback from and set that expectation up front. You know, let that person know, hey, what I would like is feedback on such and such area. Would you be willing to give that feedback to me, you know, if I asked you for that feedback every so often, every week or whatever time period makes sense, would you be willing to do that? That sets up permission. When that person says, yes, I'll do that for you, then you don't have to feel awkward later on. Like, usually people feel like, oh, I don't want to be annoying, I don't want to whatever. But yeah, if you've asked for that permission up front, then you've got it. I would also recommend ask broadly. Don't just ask one person for feedback. If you want feedback on your communication skills or whatever it is, ask multiple people, but make sure those people have line of sight. Don't just, you know, it's no good asking someone who hasn't seen you communicate or hasn't seen you present for the last 6 months, because that's not going to be useful. So ask broadly, ask line of sight, ask specifically, you know, pinpoint a particular area or a particular skill that you would like to improve. That helps the person giving feedback have something to focus on. And if they give you, you know, words like, oh, you're doing good and you're doing okay and those kinds of things, well, then we can help them make distinctions by getting specific. Okay, what was good about it? Was it 10 out of 10? If it wasn't 10 out of 10, if it was a 7 out of 10, what would have made it an 8? What would have made it a 9? So that helps people think through. And then if you're asking specifically, make sure whatever you're getting, you know, take whatever's useful from it and integrate it. If you keep asking for the same feedback and you're not making those changes in your life, people are going to get pretty annoyed giving you the feedback that you're not taking on board.
Well, that was going to be my next question. How do you close the loop then? Because in a way, like, I'm not sure I said this before, but for me, feedback is a gift. I tend to view as feedback as a gift. So if somebody's given me a gift, whether that's, you know, hey, you sucked at this and you really need to get your act together, it's still a gift. So how do you close the loop, acknowledge that gift, and actually you know, build the relationship with the person so that they'll continue to give you feedback? And, you know, as you say, it's not the same feedback because you're basically ignoring what they said last time and still doing the same thing.
Right. I like what you said about feedback as a gift. Someone else once shared with me the idea that feedback is advocating for someone's success. And if someone's going to take the time to advocate for my success, even if I don't agree with the feedback, you know, just because someone gives it doesn't mean you necessarily have to agree with it.
That's right.
But even if I don't agree with it, I want to acknowledge that person for taking the time to give me that feedback. I want to share, you know, maybe what I think about it. And even if I'm sharing that I disagree with it, I still want to acknowledge I value the fact that you've given me something to think about. I value right now it doesn't make sense or I don't quite agree with it because of blah, blah, blah. Let's have a conversation about it. But even in the example where I totally don't agree, which would be the minority of examples, I still want to acknowledge that person, say thank you. Please keep giving me this feedback. Maybe I don't agree with it right this second, but there's a chance I'm going to change my mind. And I still value, you know, the contribution that you've made here.
Yeah, because that's good advice. I think that, you know, it kind of sets up a conversation around feedback in terms of it's a two-way conversation, and it is important to kind of close that loop and acknowledge it. And as you say, you don't have to take everything on board. Like, I think that I think that devalues feedback as well. If everything that people tell you as feedback and you say, oh, okay, I'm going to change things, I mean, you'd be jumping all over the place.
Right. You've got to use some discernment to figure out, is it relevant? Is it not relevant? I guess one final thing I should say as a recommendation, which we definitely talk about in the workshops and so on, is just treat feedback as information. It's just information about a behavior or about a particular approach or a strategy. They're not talking about you. You're not getting feedback on who you are as a person, or people can't give you feedback on that. They don't know who you are the way that you know who you are. They're only talking about a behavior in time. And if you can have that mindset, it helps depersonalize feedback. And then it's a lot easier to receive and to give. And, you know, if you're all wound up with your sense of self attached to never getting any criticism, that's going to be a pretty, it's just going to hold you back for one thing.
It is. Avoiding
feedback. And when you get it, you're going to get all tense about it.
And the other thing about that, I mean, that's a really important point that you made, that it's not about you as a person. It's not about your identity. The other thing that I would say also is that it's that person's perception. And yes, it's a gift, and yes, you know, there's value in that information. But if you feel as though it doesn't apply to you or you don't agree with it, that's one person's perception. And you mentioned earlier about, you know, make sure you get, you ask broadly for the feedback. So that that kind of addresses that. So you're going to get lots of different perceptions of different people, which will add to the value of the feedback as well, and the richness of the information.
Right.
All right. Well, this is fascinating. I could go on for ages, but I'm looking at the time, so I think it's a good point to move on to the buzz, which is our innovation round. And it's designed to help our audience, who are primarily innovators and leaders in their field, with some tips from your experience. So I've got five questions, and hopefully you'll give us some really great answers today that will inspire our audience to go and do something awesome as a result.
Good. I hope so too.
Yeah. All right. What's the number one thing you think anyone needs to do to be more innovative?
The number one tip I have is to schedule into your calendar several hours, either a day or a week, the more the better. It's going to depend on your schedule. But schedule several hours of distraction, interruption-free, deep thinking, a deep work. There's a great book on the concept called Deep Work by Carl Newport. It's an excellent book. I've read it, I've adopted it, and this is why I'm recommending it. It has changed my creativity. It's like 10 times my creativity and my productivity to find a just uninterrupted time, in, you know, not sandwiched between meetings, not sandwiched between other things, but just distraction-free time to focus on something you want to create, something you want to improve, you know, an idea, whatever it may be. That would be the biggest recommendation that I have.
Yeah, I love that book by Cal Newport. And there's another one that's come out recently. I'm just trying to think of the title of it. It's Nir Eyal, N-I-R-E-Y-A-L. I don't recall the title of it, but it's all about intention and focus. So it's a good complement to Cal Newport's book.
I'll have to check that book out.
I'll look up the title later on when we're offline again. And we'll add it to the show notes as well. Now, what's the best thing you've done to develop new ideas?
The best thing I've done, so part of it is that, making sure I've got distraction-free deep work time. But also, it's really important, valuable to define what is the problem I'm trying to solve, or what is the opportunity I'm trying to unlock. I find creative thinking and really powerful thinking is best directed by a powerful question. So it's I would always spend some time defining if I could unlock my brain to provide me with any answer that I wanted to, what's the question that I need to ask? What's the question I need to schedule, reflect, think on? And also, don't necessarily expect the answers to emerge from the time you've scheduled in your calendar. Sometimes you'll do analysis there, you'll do thinking there, you'll do some exploration there. But creativity and inspiration strikes when you're not consciously thinking about something. When you've done all that work and then you're going for a walk or you're in the shower or whatever, and then bam, that's when the new idea emerges.
Yeah, I get that all the time. And asking a really powerful question, and you kind of implant, if you haven't got the answer straight away, you've kind of implanted that in your unconscious, right? And so then at some point there'll be something that bubbles up again. And it's a little bit like the question you were asked when you were in the training there, when exactly, people said, well, why aren't you doing this? Why aren't you doing this as a profession? Yeah.
That's a great observation.
Really powerful question. Yeah. And you didn't know the answer straight away, right?
So I dwelled on it for some time, and before it finally, you know, the seed turned into a tree, and bam, I made the decision.
All right. Now, do you have a favorite resource that you use a lot?
I do. I have I'll give you two resources. One's for creativity, the other one's for productivity. My creative resource is an idea I've borrowed from Pixar. It's called plussing. And plussing is a process you go through when you're thinking of an idea and you're brainstorming with somebody else. I might put an idea on the table. If we're plussing, you're only allowed to add to it. You can't criticize it or tear it down or whatever. First phase is only adding to it. So there's no bad ideas. We're just, you know, spontaneously throwing things on with the brainstorming phase. After we finish that phase, then we go through and start destroying, idea's bad. And, you know, and we go through that kind of phase, but separating the phases. So that I'm not trying to create whilst I'm also deleting, and I'm not trying to delete whilst I'm also creating. I find that's very effective for doing both phases really well, creativity and analysis. And then my favorite productivity hack is categorizing. If you've ever been on the skiing or snowboarding, they've got different kinds of runs. They've got a black run, a blue run, and a green run. Green run's really easy. Blue run's kind of intermediate. Black run's really hard.
Yeah.
I literally categorize my work into those three categories. Really easy, like in terms of mental effort, really easy mental effort, kind of medium mental effort, and really hard mental effort. And I will schedule those things accordingly into my day. So I always start with the most taxing. So I'll do my deep work, for example, on the most taxing tasks. Then I'll intersperse that with some breaks, and then I'll have some medium kind of tasks. And then towards the end of the day, I'm doing admin and the really easy stuff. And that's taking advantage of my mind's natural resources. Yeah, yeah. If I did it the other way around, which a lot of people don't have a way of kind of doing that, then try and do my most creative work at the end of the day, my brain's fried. I can't do it.
Yeah, your energy's down. Yeah, I love that. That's a great idea. Now I can relate to that because they use the same categorization in mountain biking runs. So, you know, you have green, blue, and black runs.
Right.
And I don't normally do the black runs, but yeah, that's a skill thing. Mm. All right. Now, what's the best way to keep a project or a client on track?
Best way to keep kind of both on track is if you've got a project, break it down into milestones, and then break those milestones down into tasks. So, and everything's got to have a due date. So you know, if you follow this timeline, then by the end of the due date, it's going to get done. So that's the first step. The second step is to have accountability appointments for each of those milestones on each of those significant tasks. There was a study done by, I believe it was GloboForce, and they found that the chances of you completing a goal increase by 95% when you have a specific accountability appointment with someone you have scheduled an appointment with to be accountable for that thing. If you don't have that, if you just have the idea, you've got 10% chance of completing it. If you plan when you'll do it, it increases to like 20 or 30%. If you plan how you'll do it, it increases to 50%. If you commit to someone, you'll do it, 65%. But if you've got a specific appointment with someone where they're going to say, hey, did you do that thing?
Yeah.
It increases to 95%. So that's an amazing hack right there.
Yeah, that's a pretty amazing statistic, isn't it? And it's great advice. I noticed that I'm just trying to think how to categorize those businesses. I guess it's across the board in some ways, but marketers are taking the approach that, you know, you can sell a product or you can sell, you know, whether it's a physical product that people use or whether it's a training course or a program, let's say a weight loss program might be an example. That's just a part of it. Really is the person actually then using the product and deriving the benefit, because they're not buying the product or the program. They're buying the result. So in order to get the result, they've got to actually do the things. I've got to use the product, or they've got to go on the diet and stick to the diet or whatever it might be, or they've got to go through the training program, do the exercises, apply the learnings. So the accountability thing is getting more and more built into that, and built into it in a way that this is the differentiator of my program, is that I will hold you accountable so that you will get the result. It's not, the magic isn't in the product or the course or the weight loss program. The magic is in you actually doing it, sticking to it, and I'm going to hold you accountable to actually get that result. So, yeah, that's really great advice.
Excellent.
All right. Now, what's the number one thing you think anyone can do to differentiate themselves?
This is an interesting question. Like, there are strategies you could use and external market research and things like that. But if I was going to say one thing that I think applies basically universally and is evergreen, I think the most important thing you could do is be obsessed about the result that you provide. Be obsessed about your craft. And there's a concept from Michael Port. He says, be fully self-expressed. And basically what that means is, be fully yourself. If you're loud and proud, be loud and proud. If you're, an introvert, be an introvert. However you express yourself, be fully that, because there are going to be people who resonate with that. Even if you provide a similar service to somebody else, there are going to be people who choose you because of how you are, because of your personal brand. So if you're obsessed about your craft and the results that you provide, you're going to go the extra mile. You're going to see obstacles as challenges. You're going to be the one who's up at 3 a.m. chewing on an idea, not because it's work, but because you love it.
Yeah.
And if you're fully expressed, even if someone's doing something similar to you, there's going to be a whole category of people that choose you because of your personality, and choose the other person. Other people will choose the other person because of their personality.
Yeah, that is great advice. And it does, we talked a little bit about mindset earlier on, and there's has to be a mindset there of abundance. And you've got to be in a position to say, well, James, you chose somebody else over me, and that's fine. I'm okay with that, because that person is probably a better match for you, and they resonated better with you. So you've got to be okay with that. And if you're okay with that, then it's much easier to kind of relax and be yourself. All right. Well, thanks, James. This has been really fabulous. Now, where can people find out more about you and maybe even get in touch and reach out and say thank you for what you've shared today?
Check out our website, www.developmentaledge.com.au, and join us on our free Facebook group, Coach Development Lab. You can find us there. We've got a cool group. Everyone's welcome.
All right. And we'll post links to those in the show notes so that people can just click straight through. Now, is there a kind of a parting piece of advice you'd like to give our listener, and particularly, people that want to be a leader in their field and in innovation?
My concept, this is somebody else's, which I fully believe in. Recently, I think her name is Mary Falconer. She's a coach in the United States. She says that everything is figure-outable. I really agree with that. A lot of people ask me the question, am I going to make it as a coach, or am I going to make it in this thing that I really want to do and really want to pursue? And I always respond, do you have the ability to learn, to grow, to take feedback? If the answer is yes, of course, give yourself enough time and everything's figure outable. As long as you're willing to learn, take feedback, do the work, then the only thing that's going to stop you is if you give yourself an artificially short deadline, and call anything beyond that point a failure. If you don't do that, then just love what you do, commit to it, and as you go, you'll iterate and get to where you want to go.
Yeah, I love that. When we bring people on board in our team, I one of the things I say as we're going through, if somebody, a serious contender, I'll say, well, in this organization, there's no such thing as can't or don't know. It's only, we don't have an answer for that yet, so we'll go and find out. because somebody will have an answer for it. We might not have to work it out ourselves. We'll just get an expert in another area, or we can work it out ourselves. But yeah, love that. And we're always learning. All right. Now, finally, who would you like me to chat with on a future Innova Buzz podcast, and why?
I would like you to chat with a gentleman called Fabian Potard. And he's a coach, he's a sales coach. He works with coaches as well who typically he works with high-end coaches who want to basically increase their sales and double their sales. I have chosen him because I've met him a number of times. He's always impressed me with his charisma, with his heart-centered approach.
Mm-hmm.
You know, he's really shown a deep care for people and has always had some, you know, very impressive ideas and insights. So I would love to hear, you know, a full-length kind of interview on some of his philosophies and what allows him to do what he does.
Well, great. Well, we'll see if we can get an introduction from you to Fabian, and we'll reach out and have him on the podcast and have that conversation.
Can do.
All right. Well, thanks so much for sharing your time and your insights with us so generously on the Innova Buzz podcast today, James. It's been fascinating. We've kind of covered things from your journey through mindset, lots on feedback, and I've kind of learned a lot to add to some of the things that I believed around those things. But, you know, there's been some new insights today as well, and I'm looking forward to sharing this with my audience. So I wish you all the best for the future, and let's keep in touch.
Yeah, same here. It's been a real pleasure being on the talk.
Bye.
See ya.
I hope you enjoyed that insightful and engaging conversation with James and took something away from what he shared with us today. What I particularly love about James' story is how he took lessons from the different aspects of his life and applied them elsewhere, particularly how his search for the missing piece in his Taekwondo competing led him to learn about the impact of mindset on every facet of our life and business. I'd love to know what you took away from James' episode. Leave a comment below the blog post, which you can find at innovabiz.co/James Hayes. That is JameshayeS, all lowercase, all one word, innovabiz.co/James Hayes. You'll also find contact information for getting in touch with James there, as well as links to the Developmental Edge website, his LinkedIn profile, and the other resources we spoke about in our conversation today. James suggested that we have a conversation with sales coach Fabian Potard on a future Innova Buzz podcast episode. So Fabian, keep an eye on your inbox for an invitation from us to the Innova Buzz podcast, courtesy of James Hayes. Remember to check out our Marketing Master mini class at innovabiz.co/marketingmaster. It's completely free and accessible without even giving away your email. But most importantly, it will enable you in less than 30 minutes to gain absolute clarity about who your ideal client is and how you can communicate with them to build and strengthen an engaging, enduring relationship. And if you'd like our help to go even deeper into marketing mastery, or our help with producing your very own podcast, even launching your very own podcast if you don't yet have one, then send me an email to jurgen@innovabiz.co and we can set up a quick call to have a short conversation and find out whether we're a good fit for one another. And tune in again to the next episodes of the Innova Buzz podcast. And again, we've got fantastic guests lined up, including Zachary Babcock of Underdog Empowerment and Casey Carroll of the Action Advertising Agency. Stay connected with us by subscribing to the Innova Buzz podcast at innovabuzz.com/subscribe. innovabuzz.com/subscribe. Make sure you never miss another episode. It would also mean a lot to me if you leave us a review, because what you think matters. I'd love to hear your thoughts, your ideas, your suggestions, or questions you have, so go ahead and share them in the comments below the blog post for this episode. Until next time, I'm Jürgen Strauss from InnovaBiz. Remember, be awesome and keep innovating.